Okay, today's daf is Vav Metzia, daf Kuv Vav. We are holding on the bottom of daf Kuv Hey Amud Beis at the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuv Hey Amud Beis. So the Mishnah is going to talk about if a field gets ruined, does the choker still have to pay? Meaning if there was some sort of natural disaster that destroyed the field and it wasn't the choker's fault for doing a lousy job in the field, does he still have to pay the full amount of the chakirus? And the Mishnah is going to distinguish between what we call a makas medina, something that's clearly affecting everybody, versus something that's specific to this field. So the Gemara is going to spend a good deal of time trying to figure out how exactly we define a makas medina, and when can we assume that there's a person's personal mazel that was involved, whether it be the personal mazel of the machkir that caused this field to go bad, or the personal mazel of the choker that caused the field to go bad. So we're going to question how to determine what the mazel is and whose fault it really is up in Shemayim when something doesn't go as expected. Then the Gemara is going to question whether a local plague is really considered a makas medina, meaning if it's only in the local community, based on which years count toward the two-year freeze on buying fields back, where we say that only years where planting is supposed to happen and where growth is supposed to happen, so we can use that as a basis for a question on what we consider to be a local, on whether a local plague is considered to be a makas medina. And then the Gemara is going to talk about what if there's a makas medina, so on the one hand the choker can say, look, there's nothing I could have done about it, it was a makas medina, but there was nothing the choker did do about it. He hadn't planted the field, he hadn't done any work. Does he still get off the hook because it happened to have been a makas medina? Or do we say, look, he had to do something, he didn't even try to do any work? Then on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to discuss how many times does the choker have to keep on replanting the field if it keeps getting ruined, it keeps getting wind blasted every time he plants it. And we're also going to define what's considered the end of the planting season, meaning what the latest time is that we still expect him to go out and try to plant the field. And then right before the Mishnah, we're going to talk about, on Amud Beis, we're going to talk about whether we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that a makas medina doesn't matter when the chakirus was a cash agreement. That I'm going to work your field, but instead of paying you with wheat, I'm going to pay you with cash. So Rabbi Yehuda says, then you always have to pay the full amount. I don't care what happens, you have to pay the full amount. Do we paskin like that? And then the next Mishnah in the middle of Amud Beis is going to talk about how a choker pays from the produce of that field, whether it's superior produce and he wants to pay with something else, or it's inferior produce and the machkir maybe would prefer he pays from something else. You pay from the produce that field grew, and the Gemara will quote a number of stories where there may be exceptions to that rule of paying from the produce of the field. And the next Mishnah we're probably not going to get to today. So let's begin with the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Hayim Beis. HaMekabel Sadeh Mechaveru V'Achla Chagav. Person is Mekabel a field from a friend, V'Chakirus, to work on it as a farmer, and locusts ate all the produce. O Nishtava, or the field became wind blasted, all the grain became wind blasted, it got destroyed. Im makas medinihi menakalo min chakuro. If this was something that was happening all over the place, and it wasn't just this field, so then he can deduct from what he pays the bala asada. Im eina makas medina, in menakalo min chakuro. But if it's only happening on this field, and it's not happening anywhere else, he may not deduct from what he pays the bala asada. Rabbi Yehuda omer, im kibla imenu bimaos, ben kach eina menakalo min chakuro. If it was a cash agreement that he was supposed to pay him, not with produce, but he was supposed to pay him with cash, then he does not deduct from the chakirus, from the amount that he should pay for that field. So frek the Gemara, hechi dami makas medina. How do we define what's called a makas medina? Gemara says two possibilities, two opinions. Amar Yehuda kagon deishtuf ruba debaga. If the majority of that neighborhood, of that valley, has had this maka, has had this wind blast or these locusts that cause problems, so that's called a makas medina, and in such a case the farmer can deduct from his payments. But Ula Amar, different than Rabbi Yehuda. Ula says, kigon shenishtatfu arba sados me'arba ruchoseha. Not that it's a rove of the area, but four sados in four different directions, meaning the four bordering fields have to have suffered the same fate, but we don't look at the majority of the neighborhood. The Ravid writes that Rav Yehuda and Ula do not argue. Ula is just coming to add that even if you don't have a majority, but you have the vicinity, you have the basic vicinity, the areas right around this field, that's also called the makas medina. But it's lav dafka rov sados. But he's not really coming to argue. But then the Ravid says, even if you say that Rabbi Yehuda would not agree to Ula, that Rabbi Yehuda would not think that the four fields are immediately surrounding this field would be called the Makas Medina, but Ula for sure agrees to Rabbi Yehuda, meaning if it's not the four immediate fields, but it is the majority of the neighborhood, so Ula would agree that that's also called the Makas Medina. Ula is just being mechadesh, that there's an additional type of Makas Medina. However, the Ran writes that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, not like Ula, and therefore va'ad shlo yishtadfu rov hasados, unless you have the majority of the fields, it's not a Makas Medina. So you see clearly that he understands that Rav Yehuda would not accept Ula because he paskins against Ula. The Sefer Kos HaYeshuos explains the Machlokas as follows, that Rav Yehuda holds that we look if it's a Makas Medina based on the majority of people. So if Rov of the Sados in the city are destroyed, the Choker could say, even if I wouldn't have been the farmer in this field, no matter who would have been the farmer in this field, the whole thing would have gotten destroyed. But Ula says we look at the sados in that place, not based on the people. We look at the fields, not the people. And therefore, if the sados around it would have taken a miracle, if the sados around it were affected in all four directions, and it would not have been affected. It's not about the mazel of the people; it's about the mazel of the field. Amar Ula, Bo b'marava. Ula raises the point that they raised the following questions in Eretz Yisrael. Now, these questions, the Rif doesn't quote them because the Rif doesn't paskin like Ula. He thinks all of these questions are only if you assume like Ula that a Makas Medina is the four bordering fields. But if you assume like Rav Yehuda, none of these shailas are shailas at all. So they raise the following questions. Nishtaf telem echad al pnei kula mai. What if there's one row of each of the neighboring fields that became ruined, but the rest of the neighboring fields are totally fine? It's just the one row that borders this field that became ruined. Nishtayr telem echad al pnei kula mahu. Or maybe the opposite. Maybe the whole rest of the neighboring fields are destroyed, but there is one row that was salvaged from the neighboring fields. Maybe that's not called that all the neighboring fields have been destroyed. If Sika biramai, what if there's a fallow field that immediately neighbors this field? As Rashi says, Sadabur hivsik bin Ashtufos Luzu, between that there the next field over is also wind blasted, but it's not an immediate neighbor. There's a field left with nothing that had nothing planted in it in between. Aspasta Mai, Rashi says, those that were around it were planted with shachas for machal behema, and they weren't ruined. So what would the din be there? Meaning they're not ruined because they're planted with shachas. Zera acher mai. What if they were planted with something else? They were planted with some other type of crop, some other type of grain. If you say that avspasta is not a hafsaka because it's not included in the gzera of the peranos of the tvua of whatever gzera min hashemayim there was against the grain, So that's because it's only shachas. But what if it was a zera acher? It was grain. It was just a different type of grain. Chiti l'gabi sorim kezera acher dami olo. And if you're going to say that zera acher means that zera acher makes a difference, that we would say that zera acher is not considered to be the same gzera, well, is that only like grain and kidneys? Is that's considered zera acher? What if it's two types of grain? What if it's tavua and what if it's chitim and saorim? Are those two types of those considered zera acher? What if every other field also got ruined, but with something different than your field got ruined with? Everyone else's field got ruined with a wind blast, and yours got ruined by not ripening. Or the reverse, meaning just something different happened. Can you claim Makas Medina when the specific Makkah that occurred to the field that you were working on didn't happen to anybody else, but there were other makos that happened to everybody else? So, what's the din in that case? Can the choker claim makos medina? Take with the Gemara leaves that unresolved. It's interesting. The lashon kala ha'olam kulo biyirakon is a taz in Simon Shin Pei in Or Chaim that discusses why it is that sometimes we use that terminology of, you know, kal ha'olam means the whole world. What does kulo add to the phrase? Kulo, all of it. Yeah, kol means all of it. So why do we have to mention kulo? The Taz explains that it's based on the notion that normally we assume rubo kikulo, that the majority is like everything is like the whole. So if you assume majority is normally enough, how do we express when you need the actual everything, that majority is not enough? So the way to express that is kol olam kulo. When you say kol kulo, that's a way of expressing that it's not enough to have a majority. And that's how the Taz explains the tefillah on Rosh Hashanah, Meloch al kol olam kulo b'chvadecha, that we're mispal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be megalis malchus in the entire world, not only in the rove of the world. And he says that the person who forgets to make an Eruv Chatzeros, so he's asers on kol b'nei chatzer to be metaltel. So what's the takana? That he should be mevatel his rishus and say to each of the bnei chaser that his rishus is mevutel to them. So the Taz says it's not enough that he says it's mevatel lekulchem. He has to say separately to each and every one. Why is it not enough that he says lekulchem I'm mevatel rishus to all of you? Because lekulchem may only mean lerovchem, that I'm only mevatel to rov. Kol very often means just rov, because rubo is kikulo. You have to say kolkulo, or you have to go specifically to each and every one. That's how the Taz explains the phrase in general. The Sefer Pesachei Sharim just points out that over here it's a little bit difficult, because over here you don't actually need kol olam kulo. Over here you only need the neighboring fields. You don't need every single field. So it seems a little bit difficult to say that kol olam kulo means every single thing. So okay, so the Gemara leaves all these questions as a teku. So in general, whenever you have a teku in Dinei Mamonos, the halacha is Hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. If someone wants to get money from somebody else, let him bring the raya. So we hear you have a machkir and a choker. So who is the motzi mechavero? Who's the one that has to bring the raya? In the Chidushim Yuchasim L'Ritva and the Tosa Rush, they say that the machkir is considered the motzi from the choker, because all the tevua belongs to the choker. It's just that he has to pay a percentage to the machkir. So he's considered the motzi from the choker. However, the Ar Sameach explains in the Shitas HaRambam in the third parak of Hilchos Chirus that since we know for sure the choker has to pay, there's no question that the choker has to pay. It's not his field. He's just working in the field. It's only a question, does he have a ptur? Does he have an out? Is there a ptur of Makas Medina? So you don't say in such a case that the machkir is the motzi and it's up to the machkir to bring a raya. So that's why the Rambam writes, if a shepherd, he niach edra, that abandons his flock, and we don't know if he could have saved, had he been there, if he could have saved the flock or not, so he has to pay, because the Gemara compares our case, as we'll soon see, to a case of a shepherd and a flock. So he says the same thing. You know that there is some sort of payment. The question is whether he has a patur, that it was an onus. So here also, we know that there's some sort of payment. Question is there a patur? Amrle zarachiti va'azal ihu v'zarasa'ari. What if you have the following? He told him, I want you to plant chitim, and instead he goes and he plants sa'orim. He plants barley instead of wheat. V'ishtad of ruba debaga, and rove of the neighborhood got destroyed. V'ishtad of nami hanach sari dilei, and his barley plants also got destroyed. Kamuvan, it got destroyed with everything else that got destroyed in the area. So my, what's the din? Can the choker claim makas medina, and therefore I don't owe you as much? Mir mirin damerle iluz ratachiti avinami mishtadfa. Can the choker say, look, this would have happened no matter what I planted? Obviously, look around, it happened to the whole neighborhood, no matter what they planted, and therefore I don't have to pay the full chakirus. No, if you would have just planted what you were supposed to plant, then Hashem would have listened to my tefillos, because you don't know, but I was davening every single day for my chitim to be okay, and now you didn't plant chitim, so I ended up davening for the wrong thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have listened to my tefillos. Sefer Kos Yeshua says, you know, of all the psukim to quote, that Hashem listens to tefillos, you know, to tefillos at tzaddikim, why dafka this pasuk? So he says, because in this pasuk it's mefurash that it's dafka al drachav, that Hashem is naga ar, that Hashem shines light, not on other drachim, and that's the whole taina, that it was my tefillah for this specific field, even though other people's fields got ruined. So it's also, it also shows that the tefillah was highly specific, that apparently that's okay to daven such a highly specific tefillah. There's discussion in Achronim whether whether a person is supposed to daven that way, or you're just daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should do what's best, because we don't really know what's best. The Pasukim Bamidbar Chaval Vayishma Kanani Melech Arad Yoshev HaNegev. So Rashi says that's a reference to Amalek, and it's they were speaking Balashon Kanan, so that when Klal Yisrael davens, they would daven to be saved from the Kananim, and they aren't really Kananim, so they pretended to be Kananim. So again, you see that a tefillah, if a person gets too specific in his tefillah, HaKadosh Baruch only listens to what you are specific about. So probably that's a good idea not to be so specific in your tefillah, because you see that it works to be so specific. Hashem only listens to the items you specify. Probably better that a person should daven more broadly, more generally, that things should be okay. A lot of times the things that people daven for are the very worst things in the world for them. So we should probably better off trusting the Ribbono Shel Olam in terms of what's good for us. So mistabra da amar le, so anyway, we're stuck with this question though. He planted the wrong thing in the field. Can he say Makas Medina? So mistabra da amar le yizrat achit yav makayim bivitikzor mavriyakum lach val drochecha naga ar. Most mistaver that if he planted the wrong thing, you cannot claim Makas Medina. We believe in the power of tefillah, and the owner of the field is davening for chitim. Nishtadvu kol sadosav shal machkir vishtaduv nami haba hadayhu. What if all of the machkir's fields got ruined? Below is Shtad of Ruba Debaka, but it's not a Makas Medina. No one else's fields got ruined. So, Mai, what's the din now? Miyamim Kimidlo Shtad of Ruba Debaka Lo Manakile. Do we say that since it's not a Makas Medina, so you cannot deduct, you have to pay the full amount that you're supposed to pay for this field? Al Dilma Kimid Shtad of Kula Rase, Matsyamle Haimisham Lask Didachu, Damishtat Vukal Sadusecha. Or maybe no. What's the whole kunst of a Makas Medina? Is that the Choker could say, it's not my fault. It's Makas Medina, so I shouldn't have to pay you the full price. Well, Kal v'chomer, when it's your fault, when it's clearly the Machir's fault, it's the Machir who's going through this stroke of bad mazel all of his fields are getting ruined. So of course, then he should be able to tie. Now I'm going to deduct. So mistaver dam leim mishum l'say didi have mishtay liporta. No, most mistaver that the Machir could say, if it were really all about my bad luck, then something would have been left. Not everything would have been destroyed, because the pasuk says kinish arnu maat meharbe, that even when something is being cursed and when someone's going through something terrible, still we assume that something will be left over. Nishtadfu kol sados of shel choker. What about the opposite? All of the choker's fields, every field that he's farming on, that he's working on, gets ruined, but nothing else is getting ruined. Not nothing else. Vishtadav Ruba Debaka, and there's also a Makas Medina. Vishtadav Nami Haba Adayu. Now this field that the choker is working on gets ruined, but we're not sure. Is this part of the Makas Medina, in which case the choker does not have to pay the full amount, or is this part of the choker's bad luck, in which case he does have to pay the full amount? May Mia Mina Kivin Vishtadav Ruba Debaka. Do we assume that since there is a clear Makas Medina over here, so you can deduct how much he has to pay? Or do we say that since all of the Choker's fields are being ruined, he can say, this is clearly your fault, Mr. Choker, and therefore you are going to have to pay the full amount? It's most mistavri could blame it on the Choker, that the Choker's fields are all getting ruined, and that's why this field got ruined. Well, wait a second. When it came to every field of the Machir being ruined, we said, oh no, that's not the Machir's fault, because if it was, then there would have been something that wasn't ruined. Well, how come by the Choker we can't say the same thing? That if it was really the Choker's fault, not everything of the Choker would have gotten ruined. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have left him with something. And it's Gemara, Mishum Damle, Avachaz Shayurilach, Midi Hav Mishayilach, Midinav Shach. Meaning, if you were worthy of having something left over for you, it would have been your own property. It would not have been my property. So don't say that. If it was really my fault, then something would have been left over in this property. The whole thing would not have gotten ruined. No, this property is not yours. So the whole thing's getting ruined. If it was your zuchus that would have saved it, then something in your own property would have gotten saved. So that's the difference between the choker and the machir. The machir is actually the owner of the field. The choker is not the actual owner of the field. So Meisve asked the Gemara the following. He says, Shnas Shidafon V'Yirakon. If it was a year of Shidafan v'Yirakon, where there is a plague in the field. This is talking about, we're quoting now a Braisa about someone who sells a field during the times when there were no Hegyovel, where the halacha is that you're allowed to buy the field back only after 2 years pass. So 2 years have to be 2 years of actual growth of crops, two positive, strong growth years. So what if those years, included in those years, were Shnas Shidafon V'Yirakon, O Shvi, so it was a Shemitah year, so it was not a good year for crops, obviously. O Shoyu Shanim Kishnei Eliyahu, or it was years like when Eliyahu was Gozer, that it shouldn't rain because he was upset, so there was a drought. Eino Olalo Min HaMinyan, that doesn't count toward the 2 years. So Katani Shidafon V'Yirakon, Dumya Dishanim Kishnei Eliyahu. We put in the same category Shanim Kishnei Eliyahu together with Shidafon V'Yirakon. So what do you see? We are defining Shidafon V'Yirakon as having the same range as Shanim Kishnei Eliyahu. Mashne Eliyahu Dulavi Tvua Klal. Afachinami Dulavi Tvua Klal. So apparently, the definition of Shidafon V'Yirakon is that there's no grain at all anywhere, because that's what happened by Eliyahu, that there was no rain and therefore no growth of crops anywhere. But if there's tevua anywhere, apparently we should disqualify from being a makas medina. This is a kasha on both shitos l'chora. We asked before at the very beginning of the Gemara, how do we define makas medina? Oh, the neighborhood, the area, that valley. Or not just even less than the neighborhood, just the four surrounding fields. What the Gemara is asking now is that no, Shidafon V'Yirakon as a Makas Medina has to be defined by a much bigger swath of land. It has to be everywhere, that it's affecting everything and everybody, not that it's only so local. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak Shaini Asam Damakra B'Mispar Shnei Tevuos Yimachalach. No, over there it's different. By the halacha of selling a field during the times of Yovel, that's a different halacha, because that's based on the pasuk b'mispar shnei tevuos yimachalach. So we darshan that it has to be that there's a tevua anywhere in the world. That would be considered shnei tevuos, years of tevua, as long as there's tevua anywhere. But over here we're talking about what's considered a makas medina, so it's a different geder. It doesn't have to be shnei tevuos. When the Rambam in Hilchos Shemitah v'Yovel Perek Yud Aleph quotes that the Shemitah year or Shidafon v'Yirakon is not ola to the minyan of shtei shanim, where you're not allowed to redeem the field, he doesn't mention that it has to be Kishnei Eliyahu, where it didn't grow in the entire world. L'chora, the Gemara is making that point very strongly over here, that it's dafka gotta be Kishnei Eliyahu, where nothing happened anywhere in the whole world, and the Rambam leaves it out. So the Mari Korkus and the Lecha Mishnah raise that question of the Rambam. Why doesn't he say that it has to be Shidafon in the entire world? If he would have mentioned Shnei Eliyahu, we'd understand that he means Kala Olam, like Shnei Eliyahu, but he doesn't even mention Shnei Eliyahu, so it's not even something we could figure out from context. And if it's just the fact that he mentioned Shemitah, well, Shemitah is l'chora not a raya either, because Shemitah is not in Kol Olam, as the Gemara is about to explain, that Shemitah is much more limiting than Shnei Eliyahu. Shnei Eliyahu implies the whole world. Shemitah implies that where is there no crop in Eretz Yisrael, because that's where there are dinim of Shemitah. So that's the kasha that they raise on the Rambam. So let's see the Gemara further. Amalei Rav Ashi the Rav Kana, Elameata Shvius Talalo Min HaMinyan. If you're going to define a Shnei Tevuos, Mispar Shnei Tevuos, as there's no grain anywhere, then when there's a Shemitah year, that should count toward the 2 years, because there is grain somewhere in a Shemitah year, anywhere outside of Eretz Yisrael, there's grain in a Shemitah year. Da'i Yikatvua B'chutz La'aretz. So Amar Leih, he said, no, Shvius Afkasa D'malki. Shemitah is a different story, because Shemitah is Afkasa D'malki. It's illegal, it's usher to plant grain. So since Minat Torah, you're not allowed to plant tevuah beheter in Eretz Yisrael, it's not considered a shenas hatvua. But shidafon is not an iser. It's not that Rosh Baruch is telling you not to do it. It's a makas medina. So that's only defined as a makas medina if that's everywhere. So shemitah is like a different din because that's about halacha rather than being about any sort of natural disaster. Amli marzutra bered the Rav Mari the Ravina. But that term afkasa de malka, by the way, that's used by the Achronim in defining, in helping to try to define what the din of Shemitah's Ksafim is. By Shemitah's Ksafim, is that a din that you have a responsibility to be Meshamet Ksafim, to not ask for the money back and to cancel the loans? Or is it Afkasa D'malka, that we assume that it's an automatic, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cancels the loan? But it's a borrowed terminology, meaning Afkasa D'malka, something we describe about Shemitah in general, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it a halacha, that he makes it asir. Amleim Rasutra Breda Rav Mari L'Ravina, Alameata Shvius L'Talla Minagirua, you know, the halacha is that if a person is makdish his field and he wants to be poda the field from makdish, so it depends how many years you evaluate it based on how many years to yovel, right? That if there's if you makdish a field immediately after yovel, so then it's the assumption is to be poda is going to cost 50 selas, right? That to be poda the field. Let's say you want to be poda 5 years later. So there's only 45 years to the next yovel. So you have to do the cheshbon based on the number of years. So each year is a sela and a pundion, which is 1/49th of a sela. Well, why do the Shemitah years count toward that? The Shemitah years can't give you any grain anyway. So why do we count the Shemitah years toward the cheshbon of Giron Kesef when you're being poda? So No, because Shemitah, even during Shemitah years, your field is valuable to you because you can use it as real estate. You can use it as a place to keep your payros, to spread them out, to dry them or whatever. So it's just that you're not allowed to plow, you're not allowed to plant, meaning there are certain avodos hakarka that you're not allowed to do during Shemitah year. But it's still your property and you can still use it as your property, and that's why it gets cheshbed in to the giraon of the pidyon. Amar Shmuel, lo shanu el shazara v'tzamcha v'ach l'chagav. You know, this idea that you can claim Makas Medina as a farmer and therefore not have to pay the owner of the field the agreed upon price, that's if you did what you were supposed to do. You planted the field, it grew, and then locusts came and ate the whole field. But if you didn't do anything, you didn't plant the field at all, you can't claim Makas Medina. Because if you would have planted it, the owner of the field could say, you know, I would have been zocha to a miracle. I know that everyone else's field got ruined, but if you would have planted, then a miracle would have happened for me. My field would have been fine. Masar of Sheshas. So Sheshas says, can a person really say that I would have been zocha to a miracle if you only would have done your job? Well, he had a similar case. Roa Sheyaroa Vinechedro Baliir. He had a shepherd who was shepherding the sheep, and then he abandoned the sheep and he just went to the city. Ubaza Evitarov Ubaari Vidaras, and wild beasts came. Beasts that a roa normally cannot protect his flock from came and attacked the flock and killed them. Ein omrim ilu hayashama yamatsu. We don't say, oh, if the roa was there, he would have saved them, and therefore he's responsible for this. We have to look at it realistically. If the roa was there, would he really have stopped the lion? If he would not have been able to stop the lion, it doesn't matter that he wasn't there, because even if he would have done everything properly, he wouldn't have been able to save it. So ask the Gemara of Amai. Namely, Avas Hasam Havim Makayim Vikam Esari Gam Sadov Hika Avdecha. Meaning, if you're really going to say that a person can have a taina, that if you would have done your job, a miracle would have happened for my stuff, can't the owner of these sheep say, look, if you would have been there, I don't care that it was an Ari that you never could have beaten up, but it was Kodesh Baruch Hu would have done a miracle with my stuff. Just like the pasuk Gamas Ari Gamas Adov, Hika Avdecha. This is when David HaMelech was begging Shaul to be able to fight Goliath. That and he's saying, you know, I have a track record. This is a Plishti Yarel, this giant. Do you think I'm not going to be able to beat him up? I shouldn't be able to beat up an Ari and a Dove either. But that's happened for me as well. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks out for me. Sans Gemara, no, Mishum Damalei Yavas Chazis Lisrachushe Luchanisa Havisrachel Shachnisa Krabichanin Mendosa Demasin Izi Dovi Bekarnayu. If really really you were zocha to have a nes happen to you, then nes would have happened like Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, a nes of the level of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, where the goats would have come with the bears or the wolves or whatever was attacking them in their horns. Meaning that's the story the Gemara tells in Maseches Tainis. A lot of miracles about Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. One of the stories the Gemara says is Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa once found some chickens. Someone had dropped some chickens in front of his house. It was an Aveda, had lost the chickens, so they couldn't find who the owner was. So in the meantime, they took care of the chickens and they kept on laying eggs, and those eggs kept on hatching, and they ended up with a whole chicken farm. It was getting unmanageable, too much. So they sold the chickens and exchanged them for goats. And they had a whole bunch of goats now. And then ultimately, one day, the guy who owned the chickens, they found him. He was coming by. Yeah, anyone see my chickens here? I lost chickens here a while ago. So he says, give me a simmon. He gave him a simmon, and he said, oh, you are the owner of these goats. You are the proud owner of these goats. So there was a taina that those goats were stolen or something. So I forgot exactly the end of the story now. But the simmon to show that he was honest about the goats was that the goats were going to come, that there were, when bears would attack the goats, that the goats would be able to come with the bears in their horns, and that's in fact what happened. Okay, v'neimalei nihid l'nisa rabalov chazina l'nisa zuta chazina. Why can't he taina? Look, I wouldn't have been zocha to a great nace, but a small nace I would have been zocha to. Meaning, we said, why is it that the shepherd can say, you know, no matter, even if I would have been there, nothing would have helped. You say that a nace would have happened if I would have been there, and, well, if a nace would have happened, why didn't a nace happen? A nace could have happened for you. Let your sheep defend themselves from those lions if you're really zocha to a nace. So no, the owner of the behemoth could say, I would have been zocha to a nace, but a smaller nace, a nace that a human being would be able to chase away the lions. I'm just not zocha to such a big nace that my sheep themselves are going to be able to defend themselves from a lion. But the taina that a nace would have happened for me is a legitimate taina. So says Gemara Kasha. So we're back to the difficulty that Rav Sheshes asked, right? We had said that if the guy didn't do anything, he can claim, you know, a nace would have happened for me. So the Gemara says, well, we don't say the same thing when it comes to when it comes to the abandoned sheep. We don't look at a nace at all. We just say that the shepherd abandoned the sheep, and it doesn't matter that he abandoned the sheep, because there's nothing he would have been able to do anyway. Tani chada, pam rishona v'shnia. It's now a new discussion. Pam rishona v'shnia zora, u'shlishis eina zora. How many times does he have to keep on planting if nothing is happening, if it keeps getting destroyed one time after the other? So we have one brisa that says that the first and second time, even if he planted tevua one time, and then it grew, and then nishtava, it got wind blasted. So he doesn't deduct from that the loss from the chakira payment. Even if it was a Makas Medina, he has to plant it again and try again. So how many times does he have to keep trying before he can say, you know what, I'm taking this as a deduction, I'm not paying my full chakirus? So one brisa says he's got to plant it twice. Third time he doesn't have to plant it anymore. He could say, you know what, Makas Medina, you lose, I don't have to pay the full chakiras. V'tani yidach, but we have another brisa that says, shlish zara, revius eno zara, that a third time he does have to plant it. It's only a fourth time he doesn't have to plant it. So isn't that a stira? Says Marlo Kasha, not a stira, machlokas. Hakarebi, hakar Mishum Gamliel. It's a machlokas in all of Shas, between Rebbe and Mishum Gamliel. How many times is a chazaka? At what point you could say, look, it's a chazaka, that whatever is going to be planted is going to be ruined. Haka Rebbe damar b'treizimni havi chazaka, haka Mishum Gamliel damar b'tflasimni havi chazaka. Rebbe's shita in general is that two times is a chazaka. Mishum Gamliel in general holds that it takes three times in order to create a chazaka. Where is the origin of that machlokas? It's a sugya in Yevamos and of Samach Dalet and Beis about a woman who gets married to a guy and the guy dies, and she gets remarried and the guy dies. So do we assume that she's a katlanis, that she has a chazaka, that whoever she marries dies? Or do we assume that no, it's only three times that it happens? And there's another bris over there by an isha who's gives her son a bris mila and he dies, and a second son a bris mila and he dies. Do we assume that's already a chazaka, or it takes a third time? The Gemara even has a machlokas. If a woman is niskarsha, she's divorced from two men, is she allowed to marry a third man? Or do we assume that she has bad mazel when it comes to marriage, that she's ready a chazaka, that she's that she has bad marriages? So that's the discussion of chazaka in general. We find that we paskin differently, that when it comes to a katlanis, it's an issue of sakana, chamira, sakanta meyesura, we're going to paskin that even two times is chazaka. But generally speaking, when it comes to dinimamnis, we generally assume three times is a chazaka. But this is just a reflection of that broader machlokas, whether two or three times is a chazaka. Amrei shlakish loshanu al shazar v'tzamcha v'yach l'chagav, aval zar v'lot samcha, this is only if he kept on planting it and it sprouted and then locustated. But if you planted it and nothing sprouted, matzi amrei balakarka kol yimei zara zara l'va'azil, then the balakarka could say, look, it didn't sprout yet because you haven't timed it right yet. You have to plant in the right season, and obviously you're planting it at the wrong time. So as long as it's still Yimei Zera, he can say that to him, that you should still plant. V'ademas, how long is Yimei Zera? Samra papa adasu arisi midabra v'kai makima areshayu. Until the arisim come from the, at the end of the 10th hour, from the midbar, and the kochav called kima is over their heads, is in the middle of the sky. When is the kima in the middle of the sky? So that happens at the beginning of Chodesh Adar. So up until Chodesh Adar, that's Yimei Zera. Says Gemara, really? Yimei Zera last that long? Zera. That's the Yimei Zera. Chatzi Kislev Tevis Chatzi Shvat Chorev. That's what we call Chorev. Chatzi Shvat Adar V'Chatzi Nisan Kor. That's a reference to Kor. This is the pasuk says in Bereshis Ches by Noach that these seasons are never going to stop again. What seasons? Zera, Kotir, Kor, Chom, Kayitz, Chorev. So we're defining what these seasons are. Iyar V'Chatzi Sivan Kotir, Chatzi Nisan Iyar V'Chatzi Sivan Kotir, Chatzi Sivan Tamas V'Chatzi Av Kayitz, Chatzi Av El V'Chatzi Tishrei Chom. Rabbi Yehuda Monu Mitishrei. Rabbi Yehuda counts the same 2 month things, but 2 month intervals, but starting from Tishrei instead of starting halfway through a month, so it works a little easier. Rabbi Shimon Monu Merchezun. Rabbi Shimon counts from Merchezun. But man Mekel Bekulu, who's the one that's the most Mekel if someone wants to plant the latest possible time? Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is the most Mekel. He says Yimei Zera is all the way up until the end of Kislev, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says only until Merchezun. Rameir says until halfway through Kislev. But it doesn't say till Adar. So how come we were saying over here that you get that it's till Adar? You could still demand that he plants that he plants the field. Lo kasha. Had the kibble minei b'charfi. Had the kibble minei ba'afli. The Bryce was talking about where the guy who was makabel to plant the field from the owner in with a type of tavua that you have to plant very early, whereas Rav Papa was talking about with a type of tavua that you plant very late. So that's why he said all the way until Adar, because that's the kind of tavua that he had. Then Rabbi Yehuda said, well, if there was a cash agreement in the Chakiris agreement that he was going to pay with money and not pay with grain, then even if there's a Makas of Medina, you have to pay all the money. Who governed the couple of other misery but who to me? A guy accepted a field to plant garlic on the field, Aguda Dinar Malka Saba, right on the edge of the riverbank of Malka Saba, Bezuzi, and the deal was that he was going to pay money. Istakar Malka Saba, and that river ended up being diverted, going somewhere else. They went to Rava. Amalei Nar Malka Saba Lo Avid Demiskar Makas Medini Hil Makas Medini Hi. This is an unusual event that this would happen to this river. That's clearly a Makas Medina Zil Nachile. You don't have to pay the full amount. So I'm learning about the Rava Hanantanan Rabbi Yehuda Amirim Kiblei Menu B'Mos Bein Kach Bein Kach Einu Menakel Lo Milchakuro. But wait, we learned that that if the deal was a cash deal rather than a deal to pay money, but it was rather than a deal to pay with grain, but it was a deal to pay with cash, then I don't care if it's Makas Medina. You have to pay the full amount of cash. I'm familiar with Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. It happens to be that we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. I just heard Rabbi Naftali Yeager on Sunday in between Mincha Marav in the White Shul. He gave Divrei Hesped for his Rabbi, Rabbi Meisha Shapiro. So we just mentioned Aguda Dinahar. What's Aguda? So he said that Rabbi Meisha Shapiro used to describe the difference between the word Gadol and the word Katan. That Aguda, good achis, a good dinahar. A good is something always that extends beyond itself, that it's something that overflows. Gorach is korasik, means the mechitza only goes up to here, but we view it as if it extends further. Aguda de Nahar is a riverbank that's supposed to overflow and therefore irrigate. He says that's what a gadol is. A gadol is someone that it seems that he should be much more limited than he is, but he somehow always manages to overextend himself. Katan is lashon of kata, that something is cut off, that someone so doesn't meet their potential. The definition of gadol is going beyond what one would think is one's potential, and the definition of katan is something that's less than one's potential. So I thought it would be appropriate. Share of Ardwell's student in the Shiva, Ramesh Shapiro, Beth Shem, will pick up with the Mishnah tomorrow. Oh, yeah.